If you were to use one word that would help describe the great purpose of the millennium and the great white throne, you might think of different words that would carry a lot of meaning and connection to this great purpose. But we're going to begin this feast by focusing on a word that carries great meaning for this holy day season. There is another word that magnifies the importance even more if we were to think of different ones, but there is a specific one, as I said, that I'm zeroing in on at the beginning of this feast that God wants us to focus on and has so much meaning for what we're getting ready to enter into it, a new era, a new time. But the word is family. Family. What it's all about. The God family. What God is doing. So that's the title of this particular sermon. It's part one. And I do have some series within the feast here that I'm going to be given, or giving, I should say. Family. So you might think of other words, but again, here and there are a lot of them we could zero in on, but this is really has a lot of meaning and depth to it for what we're picturing and what we're going to be picturing throughout this period of the feast. It pictures a millennial period, and finally the great white throne, what God is doing, all about His family from the very beginning of time. I marvel about it when I think about it. Marvel at God's plan and how everything was predetermined, everything was decided. God doesn't do anything as a matter of a last-minute decision or just by a matter of chance or anything. Everything is mapped out. Everything is planned out meticulously, beautifully, awesomely so. And I marvel in thinking about that, how that before God ever created anything in the spirit world, because there are two worlds, a spirit world and a literal physical world, if you will, as far as this galaxy is concerned. And when you think of the spirit world, God created things in a spirit world that we cannot grasp nor comprehend. Things that are described about His throne and so forth. Things that are described about beings who have been given life in a spirit world. And on it goes. And awesome to understand the very purpose of why He did all that. And then finally, making a physical creation. And the angels that shouted for joy when they saw those things come into existence that had never existed before. We can't comprehend things like that. That's why it mentions in the book of Hebrews, we believe it. It's a matter of faith. We believe it. We believe that God created it all. And it's awesome, but all for a purpose, about a family. His family. A God family. And He didn't reveal all that in the beginning, just like things that have happened in the last 6,000 years. I think as a people or as a church, we have come to more deeply appreciate even that, that everything that God is giving is progressive in revelation. If you go back through and start with Adam and Eve and go on through time, everything that God has given to mankind about what He is doing has been a progressive revelation through time. And the farther you go into that time, the more God gives. And so even with the angelic realm, God didn't give them everything in the beginning. It's an ever-learning process as God reveals things of what He's doing and why He's doing it. And hence some of the problems that began when God finally revealed to the angelic realm why, and it had to do with family, that there were going to be those in His creation that were going to be made physical. There were things explained that would one day have the opportunity of being a part of a spiritual family, but of the God family, of the God kind. And there were several beings, then obviously millions, that could not take that. And one in particular who hated it from the very beginning. And jealousy entered in, and envy, and the things that began to interfere, carried down through time then, in family. Things about family that Satan attacks over and over again has through time. Started working with the very first family on this earth. Got one brother to kill another in the very beginning. You know, because Satan hates family. And he stirs those things up, emotions and feelings that people have, the jealousies, and he plays on those things. He knows how to work with the mind, the human mind. And he's done that from the very beginning of time. So, again, incredible those things that God reveals. Let's begin back here in Genesis chapter 8. The first place the Hebrew word for family is used is not translated as family in the King James Version because of the broader way the word can be used in Hebrew. And even this will teach us. Even things like this will teach us. This first example now is right after the flood. Genesis chapter 8 and beginning in verse 1. And God remembered Noah and every living thing, and all the cattle were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. Now, you have to understand, a lot of words like this are awkward in their translation. It's like, God, you know, God forgot him? No, he didn't forget him. But it's just showing here when God was going to intervene to do certain things and why he did it, that now was the time for doing it, more appropriate, the time for accomplishing these things. And the waters assuaged. In other words, the waters began to calm and subside. The fountains also of the deep and the windows of heavens were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters returned from off the earth continually, or better said, the flood waters began to recede, modern English. And after the end of 150 days, the waters were abated. And the ark rested in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, were the tops of the mountains seen. I marvel sometimes when you listen to some of the things from different people who go back and study and talk about it. There was a regional flood, but to be a greater flood, oh no, that couldn't have happened. And some of the crazy reasoning that sometimes people use, or it wasn't really a very great flood, just enough to drown people. You think, well, how much does it take to drown? But here it gets very explicit about what it was, how long it took for waters to recede, things we can't comprehend. How something this massive could take place. Verse 13. And it came to pass in the 601st year of Noah's life, in other words, in the first month, the first day of the month, the waters were dried up from off the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 7th and 20th day of the month, 27th day, was the earth dried. And God spoke unto Noah, saying, go forth of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring forth with you every living thing that is with you of all flesh, both of fowl and of the cattle and of every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth, that they may breed abundantly on the earth and be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. So again, God's desire was once again to repopulate the earth of the animal kingdom and things of mankind as well, obviously here, the beginning of that once again. And Noah went forth and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him, every beast, every creeping thing, and every fowl which creeps upon the earth after their kinds went forth out of the ark. The word their kinds is a Hebrew word for family or families. And the purpose was to multiply. So again, the word for families is used here and not, should be used here in that respect if we understand the meaning of it. Talking about their kinds, families, everything, including all creatures and mankind, was starting anew. From a new beginning, and everything was going to go out for the purpose of multiplying upon the earth once again from their small families, whatever it was. God used that word, inspired that word to be used for different kinds of animals and, as I said, creeping things, different things upon the earth, that once again the desire to repopulate the earth and everything that existed. And so the families were small, whether it be of creatures and of mankind. And more importantly here, it's a word that is it like a single family or as one family. So the importance of this is really lost on mankind when you think about what God is doing. You know, with Adam and Eve, the importance of family, of being one family, because it's about, especially about mankind, and a single family was soon lost upon them. You know, in the very beginning, from the very beginning of time, but especially even after the flood, I marvel at what happened to Noah and his sons. And their attitudes and the way they thought, you know, family wasn't something that was valued. And that's very evident when you look at what took place and what happened. It was not valued in the sense of what God had given and His purpose for us and why He put us here. Even with Adam and Eve from the very beginning, when you start looking at some of the things that took place and from the very first two individuals, when Cain killed Abel, you know, Satan was happy about all that from the very beginning. And the way the earth was, sometimes it's very difficult for us to comprehend why God came to a point in time where He said, it's just time to destroy it all. You know? And all this was a part of what God was going to reveal and give as well. But it wasn't very long after the very beginning, the first generation, incredible, to see something like this take place. I don't want to get into it. Other sermons in the feast here, I want to wait on some of that. But, you know, again, we don't know the whole story of some of the things that took place, but right after leaving the ark, it didn't take very long and trouble started. You would think that of all people, they would have been knit close together. Seeing what they saw, seeing the earth destroyed, all mankind, everything that was alive except what was on that ark, you would think, in looking at something, if you think, if I experienced that, what would I do? How would I react? But that's because of what we know, because of what we have lived. But if we were back there, we would have done exactly the same thing. If we'd have come out of that kind of society and that kind of world, we would have done the same thing. And that's hard sometimes for us to comprehend. Think, no, I'd have done it different. No, you wouldn't. We're all human beings. We all have human nature. And if you're in a certain environment and you grow up in a certain way and you see certain things take place, and if you had witnessed and saw, if you saw the world destroyed like they did and some of the things they began to experience, all their friends, they had friends. Yeah. They weren't just out there doing this all by themselves. The sons weren't. You know, they mingled with others around them. They got to know others. They had wives, and those wives had families, and they knew those families, but they had to see all of them destroyed. And that had quite an impact upon them in a carnal way. And that's hard for us to comprehend what they experienced. But even after this great flood, you think that it destroyed all the families of the earth, Noah's family. You think, surely they'll hold on to that tie and the importance of family and why God did what He did. Surely they'll be sobered by that. Yeah, we know the story. It didn't take very long. They lost the concept of a single family, of one family, when God told them. In essence, everything that was on the ark, every single family, every one family, if you will, was to go out and multiply on the earth again. So with selfish human nature, it doesn't take long for true values and a God-given purpose of family to become lost on people, especially with Satan around, because we're drawn to, by human nature, things that aren't good for us. That's the way we are as human beings. That's why God has to humble this world in the way He's getting ready to. That's why there has to be the kind of government established on this earth with 144,000 beings who are the God family and Jesus Christ before mankind can begin to make a change, before mankind will even begin to listen. Because mankind today doesn't listen. He doesn't want to listen. He hasn't for 6,000 years, no matter what people have gone through. And you think, surely the flood would have sharpened people's listening. Doesn't last long, does it? You think of the children of Israel leaving Egypt. How long was their sense of hearing sharpened? You know, they got out there and Moses is gone for a little while, you know, up in the mountain. And he's not coming back as quick as they think he should. Something's happened to him. So they start doing their own thing. It doesn't take very long. Incredible what they did. It doesn't take long to gravitate to carnal human nature, the desires of carnal human nature, and everything else is forgotten. So when family is not valued in the way God intends and the very purpose of human life becomes lost, and that's the way it's been since the days of Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, from the very beginning, lost the concept of what God was wanting to teach them and what He was giving to them, but they didn't hold on to it. No. You think about it. You think about Abel, and he was the first one that began to believe God. The first one. Adam and Eve didn't. Even the very ones that God made. Adam is never recognized as a preacher of righteousness. He didn't teach about God. He didn't teach his family about God, the very one that was made by God, the very first human being on earth. You would think, surely he would pass that along to his children. But he didn't. Took one of his sons to do so. But Adam wouldn't. Eve didn't. You know, their minds were perverted because of choices they made. Eve's mind was perverted because of choices she made. That's hard for us to understand sometimes. And so you think of all the things they went through until they finally, God brought them to a certain point. The true rewards that would otherwise come when you value family. People robbing themselves and not understanding what they're robbing themselves of. Let's go over to Exodus chapter 20. This is something that God Almighty wants us to deeply embrace with all of our being. Because this is something that from the very beginning, and when I talk about the very beginning, I'm talking about before the angelic realm was created. This desire for family that has been so intense with God's desire, with His will, the things we have gone through in life, and why we're experiencing the things we are. 6,000 years of mankind on this earth, because God has a desire for family, and He wants us to embrace that same desire. And yet in the Church of God, we fail to do that to the degree that we should be able to with God's Spirit. We don't grasp the importance of family. We truly don't. And you think, well, if we have difficulty, are we going to have difficulty in the millennium? The answer is yes. It's a growing process. It truly is. Learning to value family according to God's will and God's purpose for us. We fall short. And God understands that. And we hopefully understand that. And the more we understand that, then the more we can repent in areas we fall short. Because that's what it's all about. God gives us opportunity to repent when He shows us things where we're in error so that we can embrace that which is right and good for us and healthy and spiritual for us. And this is the greatest thing in that respect that God has given to us. This concept, this idea, this knowledge of Elohim, family, on a spirit plane for eternity. And so we have to go through much in physical life to begin to learn and to value, to have desire to value such ideas of family. And yet when we think of family, a lot of times we think of our own personal physical family. It's hard for us to get beyond that. And yet God brings us into a family that's bigger than that, that's more important than that, that has greater meaning in it than that. Because in time, with God's time, all will be able to become a part, through choice, a part of that spiritual family. The life is not in the physical family. The life that God intends for us to have. In the physical family, there is suffering, there's hurt, there's pain, there's sorrow, there's disappointment. All those things that go along because people, human beings, tend to hurt each other. And they say things. And so we live life going through many things like that. We truly do. I have mentioned oftentimes that for people in the church that I've worked with over the years, my own life, everyone else's life, things that molded and fashioned you, that brought you into your teen years, those things that happened to you when you were younger, all those things made you who you are. And your battles throughout life are a result of the early years of life. They truly are. The things that made you, the things that you became through time, the things that you experienced through time are the things that mold and fashion you, and as a result are so many of our battles through the rest of our life. They truly are. Awesomely so. So again, what is the first great law that God gave to mankind on a physical plane so that some value of family could be retained and blessings received for such obedience? We know the answer to that. Exodus 20 and verse 12. I said on a physical plane because the first of the laws have to do with a relationship with God. But human beings can only, as a whole, even grasp those laws physically so. They're never looked at by people spiritually. They don't understand the spiritual intent of the first four laws that God gave at all. You have to be called by God and begin to understand the truth of God with the Spirit of God in order to understand the spirit of those things. And so even physically, those things are only seen on a physical plane. You know, statues, not cursing. We look at things in the simplest and some most simplistic of ways when it comes to what we see as physical law, but they're far deeper than far more meaningful than that. But that's how we take them as physical human beings. So it takes time to grow an understanding of that in the first four as well. But here, verse 12, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which eternal your God gives you. And so a beginning process would start there with family, for people to understand certain basic concepts about family. And so God gave law here so that even on a physical plane, to be able to retain certain blessings, to have certain blessings that God said He would give, starts right here in understanding, in a physical way. I want you to notice how this is referred to by Paul back in Ephesians chapter 6. You can hold your place here because we're going to come back here to Exodus 20 in a little bit. But let's go over to Ephesians chapter 6 here for a moment and just look at what Paul had to say as he was discussing this with the church. Verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. A lot said right there. Because even within the church, not everyone remained in the Lord, in the church, in God, God dwelling in them and them dwelling in God. But nevertheless, says children, obey your parents in the Lord. In God's way of life and what God has given. He's talking to the church here in this case. And certainly those things about the church should be passed along to children. But I have seen over the years, I have known over the years, and especially going back before the apostasy took place, so many lives of things where parents did not pass along the ways of God. No more than Adam and Eve did to their children. They didn't teach about God like they should have. They didn't do those things that they should have done. And because of that, the family began to suffer very early on. And one picked up on those things. God began to work with one individual, you know, Abel. But the rest of the family from the very beginning was not turned toward God, was not worked with by God. They were allowed to go their own way. And so again here, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment. The first commandment with promise. So God understands what we're like as human beings. He understands that, you know, and this is the way we are. That we can begin to work with something that we can see on a physical plane, and that we can see. We can't see things about God. We don't really grasp the spiritual meaning, the significance of the first four commandments as a whole. The purpose of the Sabbath itself. You know, when people come across the commandment for the Sabbath, in the world especially, it's like, that do have a little bit of understanding, whether it be the Seventh-day Adventist or whatever, the basic thing that most people see is their do's and don'ts. There are some people even use that for Sunday because they think that's the Sabbath. And so there are some people who won't work. There's a chicken franchise in the States that it's called Chick-fil-A. They don't open up on Sunday because of their beliefs of not working on what they believe at this point in their time is the Sabbath. Very unique to go through a shopping mall or someplace else where everything else is open on a Sunday, but not them, say. So, again, even from people's physical perspective, it's a matter of more of a do's and don'ts. They don't grasp the meaning of the Sabbath. They don't understand why God gave the Sabbath. But in their own understanding, at least, they don't work. And that's how most people take it. Certain things you do and don't do on the Sabbath. They don't understand the spiritual significance of why God gave it, why it's important to the church, how it's the lifeblood for the church, that without it, people die spiritually. They can't survive. They can't live without the Sabbath. That's when God nurtures us and gives us nourishment and helps us to grow. But anyway, going on. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Incredible. How God gave something very physical here that if people would strive to live by a certain standard of life, that they would be blessed because of it. The first commandment with promise. Incredible. A better life, a longer life. And the reality is, I said better life, talks about longer life, but it is a better life. The more that people can obey the physical things of God's law, the better life is. Yeah. Don't steal. The more people can live by that law, the better their life's going to be. If they'll live by those standards of not taking from others, of not ripping off someone else, even if a mistake has been made, you give back to them. You don't take advantage of people in the world. Not to lie, not to bear false witness, those kinds of things. What a wonderful thing if people, you know, people are blessed when they live by that. A lot of people would be out of jobs today in corporations. Corporations wouldn't go very far. Politicians couldn't survive very long if they really are true politicians and go very far in this world. But people don't live by that. But what a blessing in life. The more people will obey, and so it is with the family, that there are blessings there. If those things, because that has to be taught. Children are not going to understand how to honor a father and mother unless the father and mother has certain morality that they're striving to live by. It's not a matter of just a do and don't. It's not a matter of being hard upon them, making them obey everything that is said. But it's a matter of family that is carried through to a child, that a child will have that desire as they grow to honor, to love their father and their mother. And so the point being is, this isn't just about the children. This isn't something that's left with the responsibility of a child. It's with the parent. It's with the parent to mold and fashion and strive to teach certain principles. But in the world and in society, especially in this age, so often that doesn't even work because society pulls them away. The world is geared, especially in the last 20, 40 years, the world is geared in a very powerful way because of technology of pulling children away. You know, you go back 100 years, you didn't have the influence of music like it is today. That's a powerful, powerful tool to pull children away from family. It's powerful. I know I was called, and that was very much a part of my life, and it was hard for me to come out of that. It had a powerful pull upon me, music did, and I had to get away from it. And anyway, I understood very early on in the church what an powerful pull that music has on young people. It is a powerful tool. With radio, it started with radio, and then TV, and now MTV, some of these kinds of video things that are out there. Sick, sick, perverted. Now it's not just a matter of the hearing, it's a matter of the seeing. And if you want to talk about perversion and tearing things apart in family and tearing things apart in society and tearing down every kind of value that exists, those are powerful tools of Satan. They truly are because it's misused in the world. I don't know how many times you've ever thought about some of those kinds of things that are out there. They're very powerful. So to be able to teach your children certain things is a much harder job over the past century than it was beforehand if a person was striving to accomplish that. Because of the pulls of technology that are out there. Television. Whoo! Powerful, powerful tool. And how you've seen it change. You see TV the way it was 50 years ago compared to today? Some things are almost laughable because the world is so sick today of what it was back then. But there were principles that were taught back then that aren't taught anymore. On the contrary, things have changed so quickly. So again here, the point being is that things like this have to be taught with certain concepts in mind as to what is passed along. So in a better world, without the pull of things in society in a wrong way, just like schools today, you know, parents send their children to school and then they have to re-educate them. You have to teach them, you have to stay on top. If you let the schools do all the teaching, say, the answer is not to take them unless you have to because of the environment is so exceptionally bad to not be a part of that. But as a whole, you know, it's better for them to be able to deal with others and grow up to learn certain things, even in social abilities and so forth, even in a bad world, sadly. But there are certain things that are learned there. But a parent's job, if you just let them take care of that and do that, and you're not doing your part to re-educate, what are you learning, what is being sent home, and telling them what the truth is and what right values are in the midst of it, they're gone. They're gone. If you let the world do it, you've lost them. Anyway, it's all about family. Satan's great battle has always been against the family, to destroy every facet of it he can. And he's done a very good job. He truly has. In societies and in the world. And only because of the church can people begin to grab a hold of and take charge of various things in life. And even then, I have seen, those of you who are older, have been around for a long time, you've seen that even there, without specific favor and help from God, it's a losing battle in this world. It truly is. It truly is. It's a losing battle, the way the world is. Going on here. So again, here the point of this is, it's not just something as a matter of the children. It's a message to the parents. Don't you want your children to honor you? If you do in life, then there are certain things that you have to do. So that's the admonition that is being given here very early on to the church. And things that have to be passed along, things that have to be taught so that it becomes a part of them, so that certain things will be done later on in life, because that's how they've been molded in fashion. That it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Notice now this next verse. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath. Don't provoke them to anger, to wrath. Be careful how you work with your family. Be careful you don't do things that are going to turn them against family, that are going to provoke them to where they're going to do the opposite of honoring father and mother. Because parents do that in the world. It's an easy thing to do if you yield to Satan's system, to Satan's way. And most of that, you know why? What this word entails when you talk about provoke? It's by your example, by what you do. It's by how you live your life. You know, one thing children can see very quickly on? Hypocrisy. Children learn it. They know right away. They know very quickly early on if certain things are unfair, if certain things are not right, if mom and dad aren't doing the things that they're supposed to be doing. You know, young people in the church grew up, and a lot of the problems we had in the church were a result of the parents not living what they should be living. But coming out of their mouth was filth and garbage and stupidity and ignorance and murmuring. I used to travel with this one family for a time, back and forth as a young person. In the church, 1920, I guess it was at that point in time. And I've heard sermons in times past, maybe some of you have been around longer, talk about roast minister. People, when they're after services, people would have roast minister. What that means is, rather than going out to a meal, when they certain ones got together, a husband and wife or whatever, driving home, because I heard this, see, driving back and forth, after a sermon, driving home, I heard roast minister, see. Because they weren't supporting, they weren't talking about any excitement about what was being said, but they were finding fault in things being said by the minister. You think, how's that going to affect the children? How's that going to affect their life? You know what they're being taught? It's okay to do that. It's okay to talk against God's servants. It's okay to tear apart sermons and tell why or where someone is wrong in something they've said. You know. Rather than if there really is something wrong, how are you supposed to address? If there really is something wrong, God says there's a way of addressing that. It isn't talking about it with your mate and having the children listen to it. But see, people think they can get by with that. They think they can, and that happens today as well in the church. There are times, there are things I know of at times where I know that certain things have been discussed within the realm of a family, and the children pick it up, you know, and they learn certain things from it. I made a comment here not too long ago that there are times that I can tell some things about a family by the way the children talk to me or treat me or act around me. No, not always. But oftentimes it tells a lot. See, when I see a child that does not make any effort whatsoever, now some go to the other extreme and they want the child to I'll just speak plainly. It's almost like a fake Protestant thing. It's not genuine. It's like, well, go up there and do this or do that or say this or say that. And so they're prompted and they're prodded beforehand. And then it comes across that way. It comes across fake. But we know, my wife and I know, when someone is genuine, when it's something because of the way the parents, if the parents have genuine excitement about seeing us, and excitement about we're going to be there. You know what? It's carried across in their conversation at home. That excitement is in their conversation at home. I know it is. And so the children pick up on that because they're talking about it. They can't wait, you know, to Sabbath services because, you know, it's been 6 months since the last time we got to see them. And they're going to be out here visiting. And so the children are excited about it too because the parents are excited about it. And so children learn from their parents, don't they? It doesn't matter what the age, because I've seen this with young and old alike. We just were in a place in Arizona where I know how the parents are at home, because every one of those kids, they know who they are. All four of those children, you know, are anxious to be there. And it's in their eyes. It's in their voice. It's in their speech. It's in their actions. And that says to me, that says volumes about the parents, see, because I know where they are spiritually in that regard. And so anyway, you understand what I'm talking about. You have seen those things in life. And so when it talks about here, not, and you fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath, to anger, to those things that would hurt, to those things that tear down. This is what it's talking about, because children learn not by, how do we so often learn when it comes to right moral values? So often it's not by what's said. It's by what's lived, by the example that someone sets. Because if someone is saying one thing and yet they're living a different, what is it like? Some of us have been around ministers who spoke one thing and lived another. Boy, what did that teach congregations? Led them to wrath, to anger, provoked them. It hurt. It did a lot of damage. We saw that. We saw the aftermath of some of those kinds of things. And the same thing in a family. If a family does that, a husband or a wife, and what does that do to their children? Same thing, you know. And so this is exactly what Paul is talking about here. And so there are blessings and promises that start with what we do in life by what we live and the example we set. Now, that isn't perfect, because, especially in the world, because the world is pulling in a different direction. But in a better world, and a better world that's coming, this is going to have a tremendously powerful impact then in life. Because as people are taught how to live life, and that you live true before God, that you live honestly before God, that what you speak, everything you speak, anyway, wherever you are, that it should honor God. And when it honors God, when it's right, children pick up on that. And they tend to imitate those kinds of things. Interesting. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. God is the focus of the family. God is the focal point of the family. And if the family is not just speaking that, but living that, children learn from that more powerfully than any other way. It is the way to teach, by example. And so we must live the best ways. We've even had a sermon here not too long ago about within the church of how amongst ourselves, the best way to exhort one another, the words and how it's phrased, is by our example. That's how you encourage and exhort. And by your excitement of things you do together and what you're able to share together. And so sometimes we have to ask God for help to have that living within us, and that's infectious then to others. Others pick up on that, and they are able to be moved and motivated. That's how we exhort and encourage one another. Not by what we say to someone. It's not a corrective thing. It's a matter of an example thing, what we live. And it has a powerful impact, doesn't it? So we learn from each other in those things, and we do from church area to church area, ever learning. Let's go back now to Exodus chapter 20. Family, family, family. It's about family. It's about learning the values of life that God wants us to have so that we can be blessed. He wants to bless us. And in the right family environment, we receive blessings in life. That's what it's all about. So again, honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the eternal your God gives you. Then it goes on. Things about the right concept and value of family that's sadly lacking because the world doesn't live by these things. You shall not kill. You know, you're not to murder. Take life. And yet, we learn within the church the spiritual part of that. That we're not to fail to love others even. That's a good way of putting it. We're not to fail loving others. Because God says if you do, if you have the ability and you know how, God has shown you how to love someone, and you fail to do it, you refuse to do it, God says you hate them. And He says, if you hate them, you're a murderer. That's what he said. Those are powerful things that God has said because it's spiritual. And so we learn that it's not a matter just of not taking life out here, murdering someone, but we begin to understand the spirit and where that motivation and what the mind is thinking that leads to things like this. What led Cain to killing Abel? Oh, it started out with matters of jealousy and envy. That's what it started out with. And then that would cause dispute and finding fault with and those kinds of things that work in the mind so often that finally lead to murder. You know, incredible here. And so, again, I love the way John explains those things and talks about love and talks about a failure to love, that if we fail to love, we hate. And if we hate, we murder. Spiritually, it's the same spirit. And God wants us to understand those things. And this is fundamental to family, to the concept of family, of how we think about others within the family. You shall not commit adultery. Powerful. So he says, even within family. And if you go back and look at the history of man, you go back and look at the history of the Bible, you look at, I think, of the times of the kings and David's family, and look at all the things that happened within the family. You know? Oh, incredible, some of the things that took place. And David had some tough things to learn through life and made a lot of huge mistakes in life, and a lot of it was with his family. He let others raise his children. He did things, he succumbed to certain things in life and had to learn from those harsh things that happened in life then. But they're reflected in so much in the family. You go through the Bible and you see those kinds of things. And again, people have their own choices, and it shows the power of human nature and the choices people have and going the wrong direction. And yet, so much of it goes back to the responsibility of a father and mother. But even then, when things are done, they can be done perfectly so. It doesn't matter. And children can go and do go in a wrong direction because of free moral agency. So, depending on the purpose of what God is doing, but so often those things can have a very powerful, very positive, in a very carnal world, impact when certain basic principles are taught from youth on. Honor, respect, love. Because if those things aren't passed along by example, if a parent isn't living those towards others around them, then if the children start learning those things and it becomes a part of their thinking, it's amazing how it affects their behavior in society. You shall not steal. Shall not steal. And yet even within family, you know, there are things that people begin to do sometimes where they steal. And if it's not an immediate, maybe it's the cousins or the nephews or the uncles or the aunts or the, you know, a brother that's or a sister. And human nature, jealousy, envy. I think of things when people have the one that blows my mind the most sometimes that brings out loving families is when a father and mother are dead and there's an estate. Amazing how loving family can be at a time like that. So often in the world you hear about it. So often we have experienced those things in life. There are those of you who have experienced those things in life, and you see what other brothers and sisters are like and different ones who want a chunk of the pie, and they're not even concerned about the death of what should have been a loved one, a mother or a father or a grandparent or whatever it might be. On the contrary, it's like, can't wait to have the will read. You know, what's my portion? And then they fight about the portions. Or if it's a piece of land, who got what portion of land? That's the better portion of land. There are fights and battles and hatreds and envy that people have because they think this one little piece of parcel of land over here was better than the one I got farther down the line. You know, same quantity, same amount. But that's how far jealousies go. Who gets the ring? Who gets the rings? Who gets the jewelry? Who gets the certain furniture or whatever it is? And families have huge squabbles. You shall not steal. Incredible. human nature. It really is. Concept of family, not a whole lot of it there, is there, in this old world? Sick world. Human beings have made it a really sick world. We're so selfish by nature. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And people will even do that in the family. Starts out at a pretty young age. You know? Starts out at a pretty young age, and so you have to work with children. Because who broke this? Something breaks. You know? Anyway. We can laugh at some things with children, but when parents do it, when adults do it, and do these kinds of things, and then children learn that's a way of life, what a horrible thing. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, his manservant, or his maidservant, his ox, his ass, anything, nor anything that's the neighbor's. And so, what do we see in the society, in the world, and within families? A lot of coveting, a lot of desire. I think of how that's so molded in fashion today in society. And certain places and so forth. It's like in a younger generation today that the things that that a lot of times that parents have worked their lifetime to have, society has taught them, no, you should have it right now. You should have it now. You deserve it now. It's not a matter of concept of working a lifetime, the fruit of your labor and so forth, to acquire, to get to where you're going. No, you should be able to start out right where your parents are right now and keep going from there. That's a lot of society today. Selfishness, inwardness, concepts of morality that are totally lost. Let's go on over here to Ephesians chapter 5. Do we see? Very powerfully so. Do we have the kind of desire? We don't, but we're growing in it, that God has for family, that He's had from the very beginning of time. He's letting us. He lets us at different times and things like this series of sermons we have right now to begin focusing on a little bit more so that we can have that stirred up within us more. The importance, the desire, the excitement. Do you feel the excitement for family? The kind of family that God says that this earth can have, that people can begin to experience more of in a new age? Because He wants us to have that excitement for what He's bringing to pass. What He has worked to bring to pass for millions, maybe billions of years. We don't know how far back these things go through time. You know, that God has had that intense desire. Everything He's done is geared toward, amazingly so, this time, in a magnified way. This time, the time we're getting ready to go through and get on to the other side and begin to make these big changes in a millennial period, and then finally the great white throne, and then finally that which God has worked for in order to have something for the rest of eternity, the God family. It's awesome. It really is. And He shares these things with us. Let's go back here to Ephesians 5, verse 22. Things about the very basis, the very fiber, the very beginning, things of morality that have to do with family, where we begin to learn so much, and we even begin to learn the spirit of those things as we continue to grow. Verse 22 says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord." That's tough. To yield to, it's saying submit, yield to. In other words, there is an order here of things, and this is a toughie. We have, I don't know if I'll bring this up or not. I'll hold it. I was going to talk about some things in the States here that are kind of unique. I'll go ahead and mention it. We have it's exciting seeing what God's doing. We were talking about this during lunch and seeing how peoples of different parts of the world have been brought into areas of Ephraim and Manasseh primarily, and also other parts of Israel in Europe there, to be called at this time, early on, in the early stages, representations of people all over the world. It's as though God's going to have a witness from all different kinds of peoples from all over the world of this end time, of the things that we're finally thrust into, being a part of the church, a scattered church, before the church is even magnified far more in other parts of the world. So there's this part first that's going to be a powerful witness, because God places witnesses of things through time of individuals that have opportunity to witness things. And to me, that's exciting, seeing what He's doing right now, even from that perspective. Another one is right now, especially within the States, we have, in Canada especially, up through there, and a lot of young people being called, but mostly fellas, men, at this stage. And a lot of them are concerned that there are not a lot of young women being called to kind of equal things out. And so you have all these young men being called at this point in time, and it's exciting seeing this and what God is preparing, and you think about a new age and what God is doing here. And so they've talked to us and talked to my wife about it, and my wife has made the comment to them in a certain sort of way that, well, you guys need more time. You need more time before they can be called. You need to become well-grounded before they're called, before they're drawn. And there's a lot of truth to that. That because of a structure and the way God has established things, and to help concepts of family to exist in a better way, an easier way to work with because of human nature. We all have human nature. So always remember, young fellows back there and wherever you are, and men everywhere, that this is not an easy thing. It is something that they're told to do. But please understand, they're doing it to that which is very imperfect. Us. We have problems. Of course, women have problems too. But we have a lot of problems. And so there's an order of things that God has said here, if you understand what I'm saying. If we understand then that God has said there's a certain process here, that you are to yield yourself to something, then as a part of that process, it can be tough, can it? See? But God says it's a responsibility. When you see something that could be done a better way, when you see something that you know is an obvious mistake, when you see something that is a matter of bad behavior, and a decision comes out of that, it's pretty tough to yield to part of that. Now, there are things you can do and should do. You know? Not just allow a bad decision to take place. You should strive to discuss and talk about certain things and so forth. But you know, then it's the husband's part, too, to do his job. Every time I've ever started to give sermons in the past, going way, way back, if you want to talk about husbands and wives' sermons, I don't know to date if I've ever given, have I, a full sermon on wives. It's always been to the husbands. Because if the husbands will do their job in the way God said, if they understand what God is saying, then the job of what the wife has been given, the responsibility she's been given, is made much easier. It truly is. There's a great deal of responsibility God then places, just like He does within the church, upon the ministry, of examples and so forth, of things that are said, of things that are done, and things that we do in a certain way. And because of that, and we are, as individuals, as human beings, very imperfect, then God places a great deal of responsibility that things are to be done a certain way there. And if they're done in a certain way, then it makes it easier for the rest of the body. And that's the way God wants it to be. And that has to do with love. That has to do with certain things that are seen and understood. But anyway, same thing within a family. That's why it goes on and talks about some other matters here. So God, very clearly so here, God has established things to be in a certain way. So the point being, let's say, to just make this real simple, that the only time, when does a wife need to yield, submit to her husband? When is there an occasion for that? As a whole, how often does that arise? How often is there a need for that? How often is this even brought in as an issue, as a question? In some families, maybe too often, because a husband can be authoritarian. You know, we've seen that in the ministry, where ministers have been authoritarian, but sometimes... husbands, this concept of sitting in the chair and bring me my beer, you know, concept. And it's like the wife is supposed to jump up and do that. Oh, who said they're your servant to wait on you hand and foot day and night, you know, at your whim? That's not what this is about, you know. But I've known men in the church like that in times past that have treated wives that way. And it's not the way a wife is to be treated. But anyway, how often then does it come up? In a strong family, in the kind that God says exists, it'd be a rare occasion. I'm just telling you, it'd be a rare occasion that it comes up, that it has to be addressed as a part of something that a wife would even have to think about, submit. Do you have to think about it that often, babe? yield. You know, yield. the purpose of yielding to a matter is when there's a decision to be made, someone has to make a decision. And God says in this case, a husband has to make a decision. But if you understand about making decisions and there's a certain way within a family, you come to those decisions. And you talk about certain things. And it's not just a matter that because a person's in charge that they go off and make certain decisions. There's some things obviously in the church that come from God that I have to do because they come from God. And there's no questioning, there's no dealing with it because it's given from God. But there are certain things that happen then throughout the church within the ministry that have been different within church areas because the way we've been established and so forth, especially in times past, that have been different in that regard because there are many different ways of conducting and carrying out various things within a local congregation, functions and so forth, and how to do certain things and the like. And that requires then the feedback and so forth, and not just because someone's in charge, quote unquote, or whatever. And the same thing in a family. So there are concepts here about husbands and wives that so often are so misunderstood and not learned very quickly. It takes a lifetime, it seems, sometimes to learn some of these things, depending on what we're coming out of. But very rarely does something come up where a husband is going to have to make a decision that the wife would not make, that she would be in disagreement with. But because of a family situation, whatever it might be, a decision has to be made. If it's done right, it's discussed and talked about, and a choice is made. And again, those occasions, fellas out here, men, young men, old men, I don't care what age you are, husbands, you need to think about that when you're working with your wives and loving your wives, because that's what God gives charge for. Notice going on here. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church. So as a matter of order, there has to be a system of order. And so God has established it that way, yes. But to have a right family, this needs to be done God's way. And sadly, in the world, it's not done this way as a whole. But some people even live by right principles there, even in the world, amazingly so. And they're blessed because of it. They don't understand God's plan and purpose. But how much better and sweeter and greater is it when it's done right within the church? Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be in their own husbands and everything. So that should be the attitude of mine, as it is with a congregation toward a minister. You know? To be subject, yielding to that process that God has given. Husbands, love your wives. That's the magic key. That says it all. In family, that truly says it all. If there's true love, real love there, being exercised and lived, when it comes to certain kinds of decisions, you know, from the very beginning, I'll just give you an example that in the smallest of things, my wife and I have always lived this way. And I've made this example before. I don't care if it's something as simple as planting a plant outside on the side of the house, because we do this. If I want something that she doesn't like, I don't want it because she doesn't like it. If there's something she would like to have, you know, it goes both ways. I don't want to have something out there that she doesn't like, and she doesn't want to have something out there that I don't like. And so we come to a point where we both say, I like that. And then we do it, because we both agree on it. And that's the way decisions should be made as a whole within family. That if we love our wives, husbands, if we love our wives, if you love your wife, then you're going to want to do those things that make her happy, that are pleasing to her. Why would you want to make a decision and a choice of something that rubs her the wrong way? Are you nuts? You know, you know. If you really love yourself, wake up, smell the roses of the coffee, whatever it is. Smell the coffee. What is it? Anyway, whatever that expression is. But anyway, you know, use some wisdom in your life to have peace and happiness within the family. You know, there are certain things that just make common sense, don't they? But sometimes we don't live that way as human beings because we don't think. You know why? Because we're selfish. A lot of things we do at times that hurt within the family, cause friction within the family. It's because we're selfish and we want something our way, or it's a matter of envy or jealousy or something that happens within families. Every argument in a family is a result of some wrong motivation there somewhere. Some jealousy, some envy, some, I don't know, what is it? Lack of self-confidence, lack of whatever it is in life sometimes, whatever it is we're struggling for in our own lives, but something there from selfishness that causes a wrong choice or response or reaction in life. But anyway, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church. I love this verse. That means you're willing to give your life. So if you're willing to give your life, if you're willing to sacrifice your life, if you're willing to have a sacrificing kind of love, then it means, by all means, that you want to do things, even you sacrifice your will, your desire, your wants, to make your mate happy, to make her fill with life, because that makes you happy. And I don't understand any thinking that's different than that. I really don't. And yet it exists in human life, because that's why we are as human beings. But that's really the way we should be. See? And he gave himself for it. So if that's a part of our mind and a part of our thinking, then do we always live like that toward our wives? And you know what? Children will see those things. Yeah. They'll understand those things. They understand when that hasn't been done well or perfectly. And I don't want anyone to think in my own life that I've lived perfectly by any measure. My children could tell you so. Please, children, don't. No. You know, there are things I have said, things I have done because of my own selfishness, because of my just not eating on time. There is a time when my wife would know when I came in from outside if I hadn't eaten, and she would ask me, and I know what she's saying, and that didn't always put me in the best mood either, because I realized, yeah, it's because of my attitude here. I'm on edge, I'm whatever, and it's coming out because my within our family, and my son can attest to that, if we don't eat at the right time and so forth, that there's something about our metabolism, our low blood sugar, whatever it is, the things that happen to us, that affect our attitudes. And we have to fight our attitudes sometimes. And fasting is another time. How many of you have to fight your attitude when you're fasting? How many of you really feel on top of the world when you're fasting? Anyway, so sometimes, you know, people can come home from work. And that's what's tough in today's world. You have a husband and wife that come home, they're both working, they both come home, they're both exhausted, and then there are matters sometime with children, and you know who gets to do the rest of the evening? The wife. Yeah, that's the way society is as a whole. She has to take care of the clothes, she has to do the rest of the duties of the house, the food and preparing all those things and dealing with child rearing and so forth, and yet it's like, well, the husband, it's kind of owed to him that he'd be able to relax that evening. Why? Why can't he share in some of that as well in the family? Anyway, I'm getting off course here a little bit. Family, family, family. If you treasure family, there are things you're going to do within a family because it's valuable and meaningful to you. And so in the big things in life, yes, we're all going to have little things in life that we need to strive to learn to do better always. Every one of us can improve on those things by all means. But so often the big things that happen within families that cause the big problems and the big disputes are because these things are not done right, are not done well. And that shouldn't be that way. Yeah. I love the scripture where it talks about resolving an issue quickly. Don't let it go through the night. It talks about Satan, problems that Satan likes to stir up things. And so often then if people put off making reconciliation within a marriage, within a family, and if they go to bed angry, upset with each other, that's a bad thing. Because it gets easier and easier to let that last longer and longer, and it gets worse and worse, and people start to drift apart. Rather than out of love, going and resolving and having the ability to say, I'm sorry. It takes two to tango. And both should be able to say, I'm sorry. But you know who that responsibility rests with first and foremost? The husband. The husband must initiate it. And it must be sincere and genuine because you see yourself and you see your own wrong part in what you have done. So again, that's a part of loving your wife. If you love your wife, you'll resolve differences and issues like that and be able to say more quickly, I'm sorry. That's one of the things I've noticed in the church that used to get me over the years is that parents sometimes were so filled with pride and it's a matter of authority that they couldn't tell their own children when they were wrong. In regard to certain things of child rearing or to some things toward their children. It seems like it's a hard thing sometimes for parents to be able to tell their own child, I was wrong, I made a mistake there. Why can't we do that as human beings? And yet I've known so many people in the church, my mind's reeling right now, with families I've been around in times past who are no longer part of the church because the damage that was done within families toward their own children because they couldn't tell their children something as simple as that. out of love. Sam. Family. There are laws that regulate family. And there are things that produce good family, and there are things that just yield themselves to having bad family situations and bad lives and tough lives. And that's in the world around us. That's why people cheat and do the things they do. That's why people, you know, spend time getting to know someone better. Oh, you seem to understand me. You'll listen to me. And then all of a sudden they're in the closet somewhere, you know. Things like that happen at work. Happens all the time in the world, you know. All of a sudden the door is locked, or all of a sudden there's a secret meeting place, you know, they meet someplace and destroy a family. You know, incredible. What was it? This one TV guy I saw today just irked the tar out of me. I'm not going to say his name. He's not worth mentioning. And I won't give you the letters of his name. I won't spell it out for you. But anyway, the headline was something. Do you remember exactly how it was stated? It was like this extortion. You know, this individual is being extorted. It was written in such a way that was like, oh, the poor guy. And then underneath it, in little letters, he's had affairs with some of his workers there at this TV studio, interns. And it was like, because someone was going to extort, I guess, try to get money out of him, that the poor guy just feels so bad for him. What about his wife? What about his children? What about his family? You know, the sick pervert. He's a pervert. A pervert. You know, and yet millions of people adore the guy and listen to him every night. I think he's sicker than all get out. You know, anybody that would continue to listen to the guy ought to have their head examined. And yet they listen to that kind of, I'd like to call it what it is, but I won't. Because I'm a minister. The swill, the garbage, the feces that exists out there in this world that people worship is really disgusting. And it's those kinds of things we see in the world, the tearing down of the family. And it's laughed at. And then I saw a little quip from him on TV in the news. And he does it like in this big joking thing, and the whole audience is laughing. Did I have a relationship with any interns? Yes, I did. You know, like it's okay. And the audience is just roaring and laughing. I wonder what his wife's doing. I think he's still married. At least I thought he was. Maybe he's not. But I thought he's still married. His family. Think how would children think in looking at something like that? Adults, grown up, and they see their dad up there making an absolute you-know-what of himself. You know? The rear end of many animals. Oh, sick. Family. People don't treasure family. It's not a high matter of value. It's not valued and treasured. And you think, what a sad thing, because look at all the misery now that's been caused. Look at the politicians out here that do the things they do. And they hurt their constituents. They hurt the people that supposedly... That's a good thing for people to learn from, though. You're stupid for doing that, aren't you? Entrusting politicians who, by the very definition of their name, lie. And you're entrusting them, and yet they have bad moral lives, and they do immoral things, and you're shocked by that? Now, why are you shocked? How stupid can this world be? Anyway, we're learning to get our fill of this world. We truly are. And the way this world operates and exists, it is a sick, perverted world. And it seeks to destroy family, because it's not God's world, it's Satan's world. And Satan seeks to destroy family. God is leading us into a period of time where he has to humble this world powerfully so through what is coming and what is going to continue now to intensify far greater until a point in time where this world is in what is described as the worst that the world has ever known, ever been in history. The kind of massive pain and suffering and destruction that exists in order to humble mankind so they'll finally listen to his God so that he can finally be shown the way to happiness. To write family values, how to live it. Oh, what a sad thing that we have to go through so much in order to be blessed. What about you? What did God have to take you through in order to bless you? He had to hit me between the eyes with a 4x4 on a spiritual plane and knock me flat on my keister before I'd listen to God, before I could start to be blessed. I had to go through one thing after another for several months in a row to bring me down to a point to humble me to a point where I would finally listen to Him. Otherwise, I know my mind, I know my being, I would never have listened to God. I would have laughed at anyone who would have told me the things that were finally given to me when my mind was opened. I would have thought anyone speaking that way, speaking those things, was a stark, raving idiot, lunatic, moron, fool, like people do us in the world around us. So what did God have to do to you in order to bless you? I like that one word that's in the Greek language there when it talks about calling. It's the word for drag. Sometimes we're dragged for a little ways, kicking and screaming, because it's not something we automatically are attracted to, is it? Human nature is not attracted to God. On the contrary, it says the carnal mind is enmity with God. It is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be, until God humbles us, until God brings us to a point in time where He can begin to work with us. Incredible. Anyway, going on in this verse here, beautiful verses, beautiful things that God is showing here that start with the physical family and the concept, the things that begin with the husband, the things that begin with the first two people who let down, who didn't do their job. And not just because of them, it doesn't matter who it would have been. Human beings and human nature would have done the same thing. And every family's been like that since, except for those that God has been dragging and working with. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for it. That should be the driving force in a marriage. Truly should be. No marriage is going to succeed and be successful unless a husband is doing this. It will not survive, it will not succeed in the way that God offers it to be so, unless this is lived in spirit and in truth, really. Verse 26. Notice, that He might sanctify. Notice what Christ did concerning the church. That He might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the Word. A desire, a love that God has, that Christ had toward the church. A desire for what was to follow in order to become a part of the church, in order to become a part of the family of God. And here was a matter of something of spiritual adornment. That's what it's talking about here. A desire to see within everyone that would follow, would be a part of the church, a spiritual adornment, something that we could have and possess and live as a result of God's Spirit being given to us, being that access, if you will, being made available to us because of what He suffered and went through, so we could be forgiven of sin, so that the truth could be given to us and begin to live within us, so that God could begin to live within us. Jesus Christ and God the Father could begin to live within us, and we in Him. And so there is that desire of His willingness to sacrifice in order to adorn the church. And a husband should have a desire to see his wife adorned, truly, in every way, to have love and desire. You know, and if that's a motivating desire because you understand the value of family and what that means, there's nothing greater that can be given in life. And then that becomes evident. A matter to see one adorned. Verse 27. That He might present it to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing. You know, that kind of desire. You know, the world's a little bit upside down on some of that. Because in most families in the world, it's really the wife that sacrifices. That's the way society has been. Sacrifices for the children, not the husband. Isn't that upside down? Isn't that backwards of what it's supposed to be? Because it really is to be different than that. It's not supposed to be that way. I think of different societies and different peoples because of mothers that there's a greater respect so often toward the mother because they understand that the father hasn't cared, that the father has been selfish. But the mother, because of a motherly love that Mr. Armstrong used to talk about, that's why he talked about that. And so because of that, there is a greater respect and honor that's shown to the mother. But why? Because that example she has set, that they know, even in correction, that she's done it for their good. And she sacrificed for their good. She works for their good. You know? Incredible. And says a lot. It truly does. And so the mindset of a man, of a husband, should be one of willingness to sacrifice in order to adorn first his wife and then his family, to sacrifice for his family. But the world hasn't been like that, has it, as a whole? It really hasn't been, if you look at it. Again, that He might present it to Himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that might be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. I love the way it's stated here. He that loves his wife loves himself. If men could only understand that in the world, if men could only live that, if that could be lived, what an incredible thing. But it's something that's a spiritual truth and concept and thing about family that fortifies a family that the world doesn't understand. For no man, Paul reasoning here with them, said, no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it. I love this. That's what we do. We love ourselves. And that's the way we are as human beings. And men, first of all, that's what he's pointing at here. That's why the world is like it is, because men have just loved themselves more than their wives, more than their children, more than their families, and they haven't understood as a whole the role that God has given from the very beginning of time, that if you understand family and the need to love within the family and the way God has shown it to adorn the family and to sacrifice for it, then in reality, you're blessed by that. Your life is made rich because of that. Better because of that. And the other way never satisfies. Isn't that an incredible thing? The other way never satisfies. Only God's way does. That's an awesome thing to understand about God's laws. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. To teach family. One family. A singleness of family. That's what this is about. A family unit. And so there's a time. And God shows that time. And what it means. And it's all about family. And how another family now can begin to develop and grow. And so the families of the earth, the way they should have been, could have been. But because of human nature, can't be. And so God has to take us through all of this to bring us to a time when we can begin to reap some of those blessings on the earth. Going on here in verse 32. This is a great mystery. But I speak concerning Christ and the church. And so he's showing here that even that which is physical in the world, that is a mystery because it reveals something that God has intended from the beginning of time. It's about Elohim. It's about his family. It's about the church, Christ and the church, and that relationship we're able to have. A spiritual process that brings us into one family. Verse 33, it goes on to say, nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she respect her husband. And if that's lived, that will be automatic. That's pretty easy. It truly is. And the yielding then is not a tough thing to do. Whenever, if ever, an issue comes up where there needs to be any yielding. Because the ideal thing is, with the right kind of love and so forth, there is no need. Because everything will be done. There might be, have to be times on a decision on occasion, a rarity in life, but it isn't that often. It truly isn't. Let's turn over to Colossians. Let's notice this. Colossians chapter 3. Family is a beautiful thing when done God's way. And we've been blessed in the church because the more we see that, the more we're able to drink that in, the more excited we become, the more fulfilled we become of what God is building, of what God is bringing to pass. And especially for us, because, you know, we've all had a lot of suffering within the environment of the church because of what we saw within the church and a lot of witnesses of, we are a lot of witnesses, at least that which is remaining of a lot of things that, are going to be changed, and we have opportunity for that. We truly do, in a very powerful way, in a new world. But it's all about family. It truly is. And the riches and the blessings that flow from that. But in this world, in this society, that's why I mentioned things about recently, like Facebook. It doesn't enhance family. It hurts family, the way it's done in this world. And too often within the church, there are too many who were yielding to that process that yields to the hurt rather than the help, because that tool is not being used in the right way. There are tools that can be used in a good way, in a right way, if constructed so and applied so, but everything as a whole in the world is not constructed in that way, and instead is geared toward tearing down and destroying. It truly is. And so within the church even, sometimes those things can happen where if we're not careful, something can enter in, and we don't have the time We can't change the way the world is using it and what we do in the world, and that's for another time. Just a few years down the road here yet, and we can start working on those things. But the sick world we live in right now, verse 1 of chapter 3. It says, if you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sits at the right hand of God. Set your affection, your desires on things above, not on things of the earth. And so this enters into everything we do in life. And it enters into family as well, and the concept we have. I'm not just talking about physical family. This is much bigger than that. If we can start in a stronger way grasping and understanding the things about a physical family, then we'll start grasping and understanding things within a spiritual family and work harder to apply those things and to live those things. That's why I really appreciated hearing Terry Rozak refer to something that was said in the sermon here recently then about family, because it does mean a great deal, and indeed something that needs to be lived by all of us all the time within the church. And that was, don't let any part of the family not be part of the family. You know, and if we have that kind of a mindset toward one another within the body, wherever we are, then we'll be blessed. You have to do your part. And in time, all the family is one. Set your affection on things above, not on things of the earth. For you are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. So again, God's telling us to be spiritually oriented, centered, focused on what God is doing and on the purpose and of everything he's seeking to do and do in our lives and through our lives and everything that we do. And then it goes on to talk about when Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall also appear with him. You also then shall appear with him in glory. Mortify, it means put to death, therefore, your members which are upon the earth. Fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection. You know, on and on it goes here of things that just come out of human life. And sometimes physical, sometimes spiritual in nature. And these are where the battles are. And you've got to fight those battles. You've got to stay on top of them. You truly do. You've got to ask God for help to accomplish these things. And covetousness, it says, which is idolatry. For which thing's sake the wrath of God comes on the children of disobedience. It's because of all this and because of this kind of life that this world has to go through what it's getting ready to go through. Because this is what the world yields itself to. This is what the world wants. And it wants you to want it, say, to do the things the way it does it. Going on. In that which you also walked some time. So hopefully and mainly, you know, that's put behind us. We walked that way. We lived that way before we were called. That was our entire life, our motivation as well. But then we enter into a time where we begin to enter into battle. And we choose to fight against these things and to change and to repent. Verse 8, but now you also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. And so people have to work at these things, you know, in different stages of our calling and wherever we are in our growth and so forth. And these are the battles that confront us, sometimes very blatantly so. And, you know, but these are the things we have to fight. Lie not one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds. So why would anybody in the church have to be told that? Why would anyone have to be told we shouldn't lie one to another? Well, because it's human nature to lie, to kind of slant the truth, to tell a story about someone else or a disagreement with someone else and why we've had that disagreement. And generally, as human beings, what we tend to do is we tend to color it a little bit toward our favor. I mean, let's be honest. Anyway, so we lie, and we don't realize sometimes the power to lie that exists, and we have to fight against those things so that we're not lying in how we deal with situations and matters in life and not coloring things in a wrong way, and because our judgment is not perfect as human beings. That's why I love the series there when we talked about judgment, mercy, and faith, because there are matters of judgment that we have to learn to judge because of the way God says it is, not because of the way we're feeling or swayed by our own carnality or our own desires or whatever it might be, and a tendency sometimes to color things in a certain way because of our own battles in our own mind. Verse 10, and have put on the new man, talking about getting rid of the old man with his deeds, the previous verse, and now put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him who created him. So this is what it's all about, an image that we're to be molded and fashioned into. The very image that it talks about in other places, that Jesus Christ made after the image of his Father. And then that image that we're the same kind, in other words, we're made after the same kind, that same image, and that which God is bringing us to, Elohim, the family of God. Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, why does it mention things like this? Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, that means you get rid of your prejudice in how you think toward each other just because you're a different nationality. And yet people have deep, deep prejudices sometimes that take a lifetime to come to understand. In places where people grow up, in environments they live in and so forth. Things they've been taught by their parents. There are nations. Well, let's just be honest about it. I don't care where you go as a whole, but especially you look in certain parts of the world, it's very easy to see that nations today have the same feelings they did generations ago. Hundreds of years ago. No, thousands of years ago. They're carrying on the same family traits because it's passed on from one generation to another, to another, to another. There's nothing new under the sun in those areas. And it's just passed down to different regions of the world. You know, why certain peoples feel the way they do towards others. And sometimes that affects our thinking then. See? Right here in New Zealand. Where different people are from. Great Britain? Australia? Where are some of you from other than that?
Netherlands.
There you go. I should have known that one quickly. But there are a lot of different peoples here in this country. But there's one that stands out in a very powerful way, the Maori. And I know of some deep, deep prejudices that have been even within the church here because of that. See? And so sometimes, because of some that have been drawn from different backgrounds and so forth, sometimes there have been prejudices towards certain people because of things that some of you have grown up with, that's in your mind, that's in your being. Has that existed within the church in times past? Okay. Anybody that's been around for a long time, you know that it's existed. You know that it's true. In the very beginning, from the very get-go, I knew it was here. Okay. From the very get-go, from the very first visit, I knew those prejudices existed within the church. See? And that's just common, isn't it? There are certain attitudes and things that people have in Australia towards other peoples and other parts of the world. Toward the Aborigine, as an example. There are attitudes over their day that just reek in the world. Now, does that affect anyone in the church? I don't know. I hope not. You know? But I would think that it probably does. The United States, North and South. Ooh. I'm just talking about just within Manasseh. Differences. Prejudices. You know? Some are still, you think, fighting a war. I'm talking about the Civil War. And their attitudes. There are prejudices that exist there. The North doesn't really care. I mean, they won. See, that's the attitude. They really don't care. But the South, some of them care. Because it's still... Why? Because it's been passed down from generation to generation. It's been taught in family. You know, my wife is from the South, and her grandpa, incredibly prejudiced man before he died. Horribly prejudices in that part of the country where he lived in. Terrible prejudice. He was a sick man. I'm sorry, but he was a sick man. And she agrees. He would speak of those of the black race in a sick, sick, filthy way. You know, he would say some things around him sometimes that hard for me not just to. Anyway, he's an old man, so I didn't smack him. You know, but it just grinded me something fierce to hear some of the garbage come out of him. You know, really sick. And those things are passed on to people. You know, and families, children pick those things up. You know, and so not just North and South, but then we have cultures that are mixed together. And on it goes. I think of Great Britain today. Oh, tough. You know, different because peoples are different backgrounds. Where Britain has gone out to conquer the world. I'm sorry, it was called Great Britain. So they're going to conquer the world, rule Britannia. You know, Britannia rule the world. How's that song? Anyway, and there's a lot of that thinking that exists in the British people. You know it. I've been there, lived there, gone to school over there, saw that, some of the attitudes. And so Because they went out to conquer parts of the world. Parts of the world came to Great Britain. A lot of people from India. A lot of people from different parts of the Muslim world. Because Britain was out there to conquering. And so they bring peoples in from other countries. And now it's causing a problem. They don't like that so much. Because they opened the floodgates and they let different cultures in. And for some, it's kind of beneath them to have let different cultures in. Think, why such prejudices in the world? You get on the continent. There are deep feelings because of wars. And isn't that human nature? If your family's been hurt by the Germans, aren't you going to have a certain attitude and feeling toward them? And the Germans, the generation that's there, they have certain feelings because of the war, because they were ashamed of certain things that they saw different ones do, you know? And so they grew up with certain stigmas, but it's hard for a German to show that. But anyway, you know, and so there are different feelings there. Netherlands toward Germany. You know? Do we have sometimes problems of not having that a part of our judgment within the church? Sure we do. Different people have different attitudes toward different cultures and different peoples around the world. Sometimes that I've even had happen within the church, that sometimes I've heard people say things that sometimes I've had to grit my teeth because they don't realize their prejudice. They don't see how much it hurts in life. It's a horrible thing to have prejudice. It truly is, because it hurts. Where there is neither Greek nor Jew. What a time. What a time to think that we're coming to a time. And it starts within the church, but even in a new world, a new age, that people are going to learn to enjoy the differences of people and not be threatened by the differences. Because a lot of times it comes down to threats, being threatened by it, or envious, jealous, sometimes just rank prejudice of negativism because people think themselves to be better than someone else. No human being is better, if you understand what I'm talking about, than another human being. Who am I that I am better than other human beings? Who am I that I should look down upon any other human being? And when you really look at it in life, how much better life is when you don't think of yourself above and beyond what you should? You know, my life is greatly blessed when I able to think right toward other people. I know that. When I don't look down upon people, but on the contrary, when you learn to respect people in every walk of life and try to understand some of the things about them, why, what their battles are, what they've had to live with, what they're coming out of, and the empathy, the mercy that you can have toward other human beings, and the bond that develops then in family and draws you closer together. And the more we can see that within the church, I have seen it over the ages. The short ages I've been around. The ages as a minister. I'll put it that way. Through the church, when people haven't gotten along, I've seen people on opposite sides over and over again of a wheel of personality, where someone's on this side of the wheel and someone's on this side. That's why I say if we're all moving in the same direction, and that's what it's all about, we're a family. But sometimes there are some that just rub each other the wrong way like sandpaper. But the more we can seek to understand each other, stand back from an issue. I can look at people's lives like that and very quickly, and God's blessed me in that, I know, because it's something God has to give. See where both are coming from. I understand it and I see it, and I long for the day that they can be closer together. I long for the day that they can embrace each other. It takes two to do it, but even for each individual, we should always strive to continue to do what we can do, no matter who we are and where we are in this world. So going on here as we go through this, it says neither Greek nor Jew, to get rid of those prejudices, circumcision or uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond or free, but Christ is all and in all. It's about a family. It's about valuing each other within the family, learning to appreciate the differences. I have learned through time to appreciate the differences in people. I strive to learn to appreciate the differences in people. There's a lot of joy and fullness and riches of life because of that, because the more you can do that, the more you can drink in, the more you learn, the more the bond that's there, on and on it goes. Verse 12, Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies. Mercies. Because so much of it starts there, because we have to deal with our own mind and our own judgments and our own thinking. And so many things just begin with a moment of mercy, because regardless of how anyone else responds to you in life, you must be merciful. Kindness. You must be kind. Humbleness of mind, meaning you're not really, because if you think you're better than them or more righteous than them or whatever it might be, you can never have real mercy. You can never have real kindness. And definitely not meekness in the sense of a teachable spirit. Can we learn from others? Can we learn from others' experiences and life and what they've gone through and what makes them what they are, who they are? Can we profit from that? Long-suffering, patience, forbearing one another. That's in a positive way. And this word here has to do with the word I love. It's like valuing and allowing for. It means like allowing for the differences. Allowing for the differences and learning to even value them. And forgiving one another. If any have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so do also. All this is about family. Over and over again in the Bible, it's about how to have right family. How to begin to imbibe in and drink in and receive the blessings in life that God wants to give us. He shows us the first one when he talks about honoring father and mother. But then we learn more from that, and we recognize then how that God's desire through all of his law is because he wants to bless us. They all have blessings. They all have promises of blessings. That's just the first one that's stated in a very broad and very powerful way in the commandments that were given. And above all things, put on agape. That's what this word is here, which is the bond of perfection, if you will. In other words, we must strive to draw closer to God because the love has to come from him, because we don't have it. We don't have the right kind of love toward others. We don't know how to love neighbors ourselves. Well, God has to help us on that. It takes his kind of love in us. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts. The more we live that way, the more peace we have. The more enjoyment of life we have. The more at peace we are. To the which you are called in one body, and be you thankful. Again, going back to that sermon we heard this morning about rejoicing, it's about doing these things, being thankful for one another at the feast, being thankful for one another in our congregations. Be thankful for the things that God is bringing us through to a time and what's ahead for us. Let the word of God dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching, admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. You know, this verse here has been so misunderstood by the world. You give this to a Protestant man, they'll go off on a tangent on that one. You know, it's like you start singing praises, you know, you just break out in a song. It's not what this is about. You know, it's talking about if we live a certain way of life, there's that which is going to be in you, that's going to well out of you in things you do and things that are going to be seen by others. And it's going to be because of that which is in your heart and in your being, of how you feel, of how you think, whether gratitude is there, whether the song and spirit is there in your being toward others, toward the church, toward what God is doing. It's spiritual in nature, in other words. And whatever you do, it says that you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by Him. Powerful, powerful. Oh, you can pray about those things, ask God for help to do that. But that verse 17, that's a powerful verse. It truly is. The ability to be thankful and how we're able to have a greater thankfulness and ability to do what Terry mentioned this morning here about being thankful and being able to rejoice and so forth. I want to go on here just a little bit farther just to mention a couple of things here and setting the pace for tomorrow and the sermon we're going to continue on. But I want to go back to Genesis and set a bit of the stage here, and we'll take off with this tomorrow as well. But going back to Genesis, let's notice how God dealt with the families of the earth shortly after the flood again here, okay? We're going to be going to Genesis 10 here if you want to go there first, and I'll be there in a moment. But again, after the flood, a brief history is given concerning the families that came from Noah, and it says that Noah lived 350 years after the flood. Amazing! The lifespans. The lifespan of Methuselah before all these things came to pass, and what was it? Well, I can't remember exactly. I have to go back and look here. 960 years, whatever it was. That's a long time. You know, to think you'd almost live a millennium? That's incredible. The lives of some of those people. But the perversion was so sick because of that. Because of the long lifespans of people and how professionally perverted they became. It was a real sick, sick world. The minds of people. Things we cannot comprehend. To be professional at perversion and sickness, that's a pretty sick thing to be known for. But anyway, it goes on to, thinking about some of these things again, where it talks about Noah lived 350 years past the flood and to an age of 950 years. Incredible. That long to see the things he saw. I'm looking forward to ending mine. I'm serious. I am looking forward to getting out of this body. I've had it. I've had it with my human nature. I don't want to have to live anew with human nature any longer. The imperfections of human nature, when I see what God is offering and realize how close we are, I'm so thankful. I don't have to live to be 70, 80, 100. Well, I probably wouldn't live that long anyway. But anyway, if I did, or beyond that, I cannot imagine. I really can't conceive of living for 300, 400, 900 years in the same carnal, physical, selfish body. You want to talk about something that blows your mind? That one really blows my mind. To me, that would be the height of misery. But that's only because I know what I know. Not knowing that, I wouldn't have been back there. Say, I didn't live in that period of time. But knowing what I know and living where I am now, to me, that is a horrifying thought. You know, to have to have lived that long, it truly is. But they did. And the things they saw, incredible. And after the flood, the divisions of people that went out upon the earth are described then in Genesis chapter 10 here, and that's what I want to look at just a little bit here to set the stage for tomorrow. And again, these divisions are described as those who came from the three basic divisions of the races that went out upon the earth. That evidently, from what we understand, that what was given to Mr. Armstrong is that these races then were brought out through the wives, most likely, that they had of Noah's three sons. But anyway, Genesis 10 and verse 1. Now, these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them were sons born after the flood. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, Magog, Madia, Javan, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Tubal, Meshech, and Tiras, then the verses follow, even break down the sons even more into specific divisions of people. But again, that's those name certain ones and the divisions that came from them. And then notice verse 5 talks about, but these were the isles of the Gentiles. Kind of interesting how it's stated here, divided in their lands. The Hebrew uses this much like foreign nations, this word Gentiles, aliens. And in all other areas, not specifically, generally talking about all other peoples, not specifically a part of Israel in context. The point being is Israel hasn't started yet, but it's showing here something that began to happen, the divisions of families and all nationalities, Gentiles, if you will, that were going to work, because God was going to start working with a family that would lead into a specific family name that he would work with through a long period of time here. And all others are referred to in that sense. And so it's showing here the formation of those nations, of those peoples, those Gentiles that would come through time. And it goes on to say, divided by in their lands, everyone after his tongue, after their families in their nation. So again, the divisions came from a basic division of the three sons of Noah, again, Japheth. And I thought I'd just mention this just as a thing on the side here that seems to be the case. Of Japheth, it's believed that came the peoples of the Orient, like Japan, China, Mongolia, and so forth. And just like Javan, there's spinoff of certain consonants and so forth that are used there. Japan, believed to be certain peoples like that, as well as wide variations from the Oriental peoples to include others that descended from Japheth, such as Spaniards, Grecians, Italians, and the Medes. That's a belief that has existed in the church, and I don't know any reason why it's wrong or wouldn't be right, but again, here, a lot have gone into this in the past of looking into some of these things. May well be. We all came from someplace, and from certain divisions, yes, obviously, and from the three sons, yes, obviously, but some of these peoples seem to be, in this case, a spinoff because of different families and so forth that came through time and where they migrated to and so forth, and different mixtures of peoples and what they did. And then there are those who are attributed to as descending from Ham, such as the many regions, obviously, of Africa there, and a wide variation of people, including people of India, Egypt, some from the southern coast areas of Spain, and some peoples of South America, the Hittites, who are believed to be the Indians of North America, and so forth. So again, different peoples, not always what we'd consider the same color, but from the same family lines that split out, and we have different appearances of people. Wide varieties that came out of these sons like this that spread out through all the earth, and that's what God is showing. An awesome thing, and if we could only understand it, a beautiful thing. But that's not how people react to it, and that's how the people in the world don't react to those things, and generally have tried to go around killing each other in order to get rid of the other, so they just have one. Then there are those who descended from Shem, which include those that descended from Abraham, including Israel, and so many of the Arabic nations, also Germany, including other parts of Europe, large areas of Russia, and so forth. So the different peoples that spread out to different regions of the world. And that's what it's talking about, the many family lines. It's an incredible, to me, it's a fascinating history. Sadly, it's marred with the hatreds that existed. And you think of the wars that have been fought against these different peoples, and people didn't get along. Families didn't get along. It's because families didn't get along. And things were passed down through generations of people, through time. The things that still exist in the world, you look at the Arab world today and Israel, Israelites, and they don't. Some of them don't even understand why they have such hatred for, anyway, Great Britain and some of the things on up there, and then Dan not getting all right. You know, you talk about Ireland and some of the things that go back in time of things that have happened, France and the animosities that existed between brothers. They've even talked about how that Manasseh, whether it be true or not, I don't know, but some have felt in times past Manasseh was separated by a river. Because certain ones didn't get along even there, even within the same tribe, within the same family. And some have thought and maybe postulated that possibly because of certain ways that people are, they kind of tended to migrate to the same regions in the north and south in the U.S. And then we have our war because there are differences in thinking with people separated by a river and separated by what's called a Mason-Dixon line. Those are in the States. Anyway, may or may not be true. But it's amazing. Things are passed down through family lines. Hatreds and envyings and jealousies and murder. What a sick, sick world we've lived through in 6,000 years. So we'll continue on tomorrow with this sermon on family here. But, you know, it's kind of interesting when you start thinking about all the different families of the world and where they came from and what should be a beautiful thing and what should enrich life. You know, this is something that is... I've enjoyed seeing, my wife and I have talked about seeing in some of the opportunities our son has had and going to different parts of the world. And something that he tends to have a trait of my wife's father, who loved people. He loved different people. It was just something he just loved. He would love watching different kind of people and things that they did and different backgrounds of people. He loved going into talking about looking at things in music of different nationalities. He just loved things about different nationalities. And we've kind of gotten a charge out of Germany and some of those things, how that, you know, here he is now in Germany and different things that they've traveled. They went over to Asia here recently. They had the opportunity of going over to, was it Indonesia, Borneo area, Malaysia. They went to some of those areas there and they love it, you know, different things in the world that they love different nationalities of people. Him and his wife both have the same desire and like there. And you think, and that's the way life should be, you know, to enjoy the uniqueness of different people and cultures. And people in the world rob themselves when they don't do that. Instead, they have jealousies or envyings. And rather than enjoying and savoring the differences, human nature and the world's history has been one of opposing those things and being threatened by those things and having haughtiness and pride against those things to the point of wanting to see other people destroyed. What a sick, sick world. And God's getting ready to turn that up right side up to where we do learn to enjoy and to love the differences of different people. And we start doing that within the church. We learn that within the church. It's an awesome thing.